Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it. Hi, this is Dennis Lee. My guest today on the Backyard Oasis podcast is Dr. Stephen German. Steve is a licensed psychologist who has, throughout his career, tried to help others with the negative impact from stress. We're going to talk about stress. Everybody relax. We're going to have a good time with this. Interesting stuff. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you for having me. My wife and I are fans of your podcast and learn from all of the guests that you've had, so I'm looking to be a part of it.
Thank you very much. I'll send you a check for that endorsement. Thanks a lot. You know, a lot of people know a lot about different topics. Loads of people have loads of information, but not everybody writes a book. Some people know it, but they never even think writing a book. Maybe they thought of it, but they never get around to it. So I want to figure out why you decided you should write a book.
Good question. It causes me to reflect that over the course of my life and career, on a personal level, I've had the opportunity to experience stress and also to see that it's possible to move beyond it to a better place. And in my work with people, both in the public schools, in the outplacement field, during my service with the military, I got to see that stress can be a destructive force, but I also saw that people can find ways to move beyond it and create a more positive forward movement for themselves. So the reason for writing the book was just an opportunity to give people a sense of optimism that, yes, stress is part of living, but we can all move forward and have a good life despite having to deal with it.
Well, you partially answered it, but I think it's interesting because you've done a lot of different things. But why did you happen to pick stress to write about? In other words, you could have written about being a teacher. You could have written about being a special ed coordinator. You could talk about a lot of things. But why did you hone in on worrying or curing problems from stress?
Looking at the world as we see it now, Dennis, I think there are a lot of folks within our world that are dealing with a lot of stress. That could be from food insufficiency, housing insufficiency. It could be from changes in the culture. It could be from relationships. It can be from the flow of digital communication and the media and some of the rhetoric. So I think it's an issue that all of us are facing. And I think the timing on the book is just very appropriate. And there's a need for people to keep moving forward in a positive way with their life. And I think this book offers an opportunity for people to do that.
I should mention the name of the book, your new book, Lessen the Stressin', Strategies for Becoming Smarter in Managing Stress. Now, you write about stress as you mentioned it as a kid. I read the introduction, which I actually enjoyed reading about where you came from, the Bronx, New York. I have some relatives there, so I kind of relate to that. But you write a vague feeling you came to realize was stress, which, as you write in the book, which can be defined as the body's reaction when the surrounding world appears to be heading in the wrong direction. So as we talk here today, someone out there probably is listening to this and has that vague feeling. so your strategies might help. There are questions in your book that someone might have to figure out their levels of stress. Now, we all feel some of it, but you have this level of stress scale. So let's talk about that. If somebody thinks they have stress, but they say, I picked up this book, I got this book from Dr. Steve German, but how bad is my stress? So you have the answer to that question.
I wish I had the answer to that question for everybody, Dennis. That's a good question. Sometimes we don't know when we're feeling stress. And one of the things that I write about and talking with people have always talked about is how can we all become smarter in dealing with stress and managing stress. And one of the first elements as part of that is having an understanding of what stress is in general, and then having a sense of when you're beginning to experience stress. It's important that folks know that they are feeling it so they can deal with it, and also know the impact of stress so that they can be motivated to do it. So within the book, I reported something called a perceived stress scale, and it's just a series of questions that people can use to help them figure out if they see themselves as having stress. And that test is available online, and somebody can Google that perceived stress scale and take it online. I will say, though, since stress has some impact on our health and well-being, that if somebody is feeling stress or has a sense that they're feeling stress, and sometimes it takes some reflection to decide that, that is something to talk over with a healthcare provider because it is important to, from a health perspective, to manage stress.
Can you give us a few examples from that information, from that stress test, as you would call it? Give me just a few things you might find in that test.
A lot of it has to do with how you see yourself feeling stress. For example, do you feel overwhelmed at times? Do you feel confident in your ability to manage challenges when they're forthcoming? Do you feel that things are coming at you in a rapid way? One of the elements that stress, one of the causes of stress, is when individuals start to feel as if they're losing a sense of control in their environment. Stress comes from a feeling of being threatened, either something actually threatening, something that you see might be stressing, or anticipating something that could be threatening. And very often that's related to a sense of being in control. And I think this perceived stress scale, which is not the final word, it's part of a whole series of tests that people can take, but it's a good start, provides some of that information for people to look at for themselves.
Let's talk a little bit about losing control. Let's talk about things that happen. I can come up with some. I'm sure you've gone through this to do it, but most anybody would think about that. What areas, like, do you feel like you're not in control when you're talking to your spouse or your boss? Or let's talk about some things, how people might think, well, what are we talking about, losing control? Is that a thing that people have a problem with? It's at work, or is it, could be a hobby, or they're not in control, they don't get things right? How do you look at that if we're talking about that?
That can come in a number of ways, Dennis. And again, feeling that sense of being in control or losing a sense of control might be different for you or for me, for anybody else that we talk to. So it's a very individual thing. For example, somebody at work can start to feel overwhelmed because the assignments keep coming at them, and they feel like they just can't manage, and the sense of just they can't handle what they're being asked to do. That could come from somebody who's in a job that's physically demanding, and the tasks become so overwhelming that they're becoming exhausted, they're feeling sick, they're feeling run down. They feel a threat in terms of being healthy.
And well, I would think that in interpersonal relationships,
too. I would imagine couples have that. If somebody's not getting along, that's Absolutely. Another area where you don't have control, right?
Absolutely. The demands of family, of having a child, having several children, taking care of other family members who might be living in the home. There's a concern in our culture about adequate housing, being able to have housing to support your family.
Especially these days.
Correct.
People want to buy a new house. And aside to that, I know a couple of real estate people, just to use an example. And he was telling me, as a real estate agent, he felt a loss of control because he valued helping people that were buying their first home. And because of the prices of homes, he couldn't help them. And he was frustrated, and Right. he felt stressed because he knew they couldn't afford what was out there.
Right.
And in his life, that gave him stress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of challenges that we all meet every day, you know, with family members, with the work that we do, with taking care of a family's basic needs in terms of housing and food and the price that's increasing for those. And those can contribute sometimes to a sense of not having control, and that often leads to a feeling of stress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about just communication in general. You always hear people talk about that. We're not communicating. Could be a wife, could be a friend. You're trying to make a point, and someone's not really understanding what on earth you're talking about. But you talk about not only in language, which I think makes a lot of sense, but in tone. You know, what you say, but how you say it is pretty darn important.
Right. Yeah. Another element of being smart with stress is being able to take care of the things you need to take care of each day in a way that don't create stress. And for sure, if we are able to communicate in a way that that builds relationships with people, that encourages the support that we get from being with other people, if we can listen to other people effectively and make connections with them, those are things that are going to help reduce the stress in our daily life. On the other hand, if we are conducting, if we're communicating with others in way that in ways that push people away, destroy or harm relationships, we're cutting off ourselves from a very important part of managing stress, which is making connections with others and getting the supports that come from having connections with others. Mm-hmm. So communication, being able to listen effectively, being able to confront others effectively, not being bound by confusion about what other people are saying, being open for other people, those are all things for effective communication, and that's part of being smart with stress. Mm-hmm. And will help reduce stress.
Now, I'm going to veer off a little bit because I read a story you had in your book, which I found fascinating. You used it in relation to communicating, and you told the story about being, I think you were a teacher, and you thought that one of your kids that you had in class, I believe, wasn't really paying attention. And I liked that story. And then you found out that in his culture, I don't know if he was Mexican or I don't know what the culture was.
Right.
I don't know. I assume it was in the Bronx, so I'm thinking maybe Spanish. I'm not really sure. But you thought he wasn't listening to you, but in his culture, he wasn't supposed to look at you, and you didn't understand that, and so you had to break down a culture, and as you told the story, you called his mom because you thought he wasn't paying attention.
Right.
Something like that, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I remember that young fellow very well, and he was one of my best students, and I would always work with him because I liked him. He was trying hard, and he started to fall off track a little, and he would never look at me, and in my neighborhood when I grew up, you looked at people as a sign of respect, and I just filed that away. When things got to a bad situation with him, I said, I need to speak to your mom. We had a conversation, and again, he wasn't looking at me, and I told the mom, I don't think he's paying attention to me. And this is where she corrected me and said that in our culture, it's a sign of respect for teachers not to look at them. And the point that I was making in the book is that part of communicating with others is being able to understand how they are communicating with us, even when they're not speaking with us, and to not have stereotypes or preconceived assumptions of what people are saying with their words or the way they express themselves with their body language, but just to accept people where they are. And again, the goal is to make connections with others and to develop a sort support system with people, because one of the ways that we can reduce the stress in our lives is to have the support of others and to make connections with others in the world around us and on a daily basis as well.
And nobody's an island, the old song.
Right.
You know, nobody's an island. A few people can go in the woods and be happy, you know, and eat tree bark
right.
or something, but most people need other people to feel good.
Right. And let me add something to what you've said and what I was talking about just before. One of the things I've always encouraged people to do is to start small talk. You know, around the holiday season, we all start these conversations, waiting online to buy gifts, buy food. If it's safe and appropriate and you're not violating anybody's, making anybody upset or making somebody else feel uncomfortable, starting small talk, chit-chat with people in various settings is a way of connecting with people. And it also takes some of the focus on a daily basis away from feeling stressed and just trying to engage with somebody else.
I think it's a good thing if it works, if you find the right people, right?
Correct.
One of the things you mentioned, and you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you talked about listening, and you have some interesting conversation in the book, which I found interesting, really, really listening. And as I read that, I'm thinking, you know, I think I'm guilty of that. I mean, I have to be honest with you, because I think sometimes I know I'm guilty of this. If I'm having a discussion, particularly if I believe strongly about something, am I really listening? But am I trying to get the answer out before I listen to what they say? And I know that's, I'm just talking for myself. I don't know if that causes stress for me, but I know it's not something that maybe, well, could cause stress for the other person, I think. I mean, if you're not listening and they're not getting their message out.
Yeah, I think you made a good point there. There was an author some years ago who wrote about the qualities of effective living, of effective people, and I believe his name was Stephen Covey. And he said that listening, effective listening, is one of those qualities of effective living. And he talks about being able to listen with the intent of listening and not replying. So
I like that, though. And that's what hit me as somebody reading your book. I read that and I said, well, I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. And, you know, we've all encountered people who we know who say they're listening to us, but they're offering their suggestions or offering their life experience rather than actively listening to what we're saying. And one of the things that I just mentioned a little while ago, and I'll reinforce it because it's so important, in terms of managing stress, one of the things to be thinking about is what are you doing to reduce the amount of stress or avoiding stress? And one of the ways of helping keep stress levels at a minimum is making connections with other people, being supportive of them, letting them be supportive of you, and being able to listen effectively, being able to confront people effectively, not being confused by body language, which might be different, as in the case of the young boy I was talking about. But just really seeking to make connections with others is one of the key elements of reducing stress on a daily basis.
You use the term in the book, really listening, walking in someone's shoes.
Yes.
In other words, you're listening, but do you really try to understand what they're going through? I think that's not an easy thing to do, I think, to really take it in and really, really listen. I think that's not necessarily
right.
easy.
No,
sounds good in the book, I mean, but it's in practice, I don't think it's an easy thing to do.
Well, I think we all like talking about ourselves. And we all have stories that we like to tell others, and I certainly am that way as well. In my professional work, I certainly made a focus of listening to others. What the idea behind active listening or empathic listening is sometimes called is just taking a deep breath and letting somebody talk and reflecting back on what you heard them say. And having that connection with somebody and what their words are and what the feelings that might be behind the words. Again, can't say it enough times, but it's so important to make connections with others and to take the focus off yourself, myself, other selves during stressful periods. Stress and the feeling of threat has a way of focusing on our fears and our concerns and our worries, what might happen to us. If we could all spend a little more time focusing on what other people are saying and what they're doing and reinforcing that, letting them know we understand, that's encouraging connections. And I might add, in this politically charged environment in which we're currently living, being able to listen to others and connect with others becomes even more important.
Maybe impossible these days.
I'm an optimist, and yeah. Throughout the book, I try to give that sense of optimism that, yes, it takes some effort, but it can be done.
Mm-hmm. One of the areas that you talk about, and you mentioned briefly when we started, you talked about technology and the overusing of technology causing problems. And this is an area, for example, you got a kid that's, in third grade, he can run the computer better than either of us can.
Right.
And we have to speak to our kids or grandkids.
Right.
And we're learning. And that causes stress, too, because
correct.
I tell the story about a radio station that I worked at. They put in a computer, and they didn't teach anybody how to do it.
Hmm.
And we had to learn as we went.
Right.
And that was beyond stress because every time we thought of hitting F9 on the computer, which started the next commercial, we thought the world was going to come to an end.
Right.
And technology's a problem. Emails are a problem, right? Everybody's getting bombarded by information.
Yes.
I kind of think I like to talk to people. I like to hear their voice. You know, an email doesn't really show them. It doesn't really... You read the words, but you don't feel the emotion. So that's causing a problem, right? Just all the technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think all of these technologies are kind of grouped under the term information communication technologies. And there's actually a term that's out there to describe the kind of stress that comes from use or overuse of these. It's called digital stress or techno stress. And yes, that is a problem. And for sure, all of these technologies and the way we can communicate with people, you know, Zoom, email, all of the other media resources, those are wonderful ways to connect with others. And getting back to what I just said previously, making that connections with others is important. The problem is that these technologies are all around us. Our phones potentially are buzzing all the time. The communication which is coming across on some of these technologies is often not as complete, because if we have somebody in front of us and they're talking to us and we can see their body language and their facial expressions and hear the tone of their voice, we're a little better able to make a connection and get to know them better. Mm-hmm. So right away, that's a disadvantage with these technologies. But if I could say one thing about that, we all have a choice to make when we turn our devices on and when we turn our devices off. And that gives us a sense of control, whereas if we leave devices on all the time and are responding to them every time they go off, that contributes to a sense of loss of control. And we know that that's where stress starts to arise.
And how many times have you gone into a restaurant, or I've gone into a restaurant, and there's four people, there's a husband and a wife and two kids, and nobody's talking, nobody's communicating, and they're buried in their phones. And I always think when I see that, why do they go out to eat? I mean, why spend the money go to the restaurant or the diner or wherever they're going?
Good question.
What a waste.
Yeah.
I mean, what a complete waste. You're not even looking at your kid. I ran into a guy at a diner I go to all the time. Matter of fact, this one diner, it's in Florence, and I've talked about it all the time because I've had several people that end up as guests on the podcast because I ran into them at the diner having a conversation.
Right.
And it's really amazing how everybody's on a phone. Everybody,
yes.
they're not talking and to each other. And I think it's a shame. I think it's, I like to talk to people, look in their eyes, but I guess these days it's tough. One area you talked about, you mentioned information, and one of the things you mentioned in your book, getting the right information. Sometimes people don't have the right information, and what happens is so communication is wrong because the facts are wrong.
That's a problem potentially, yes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the limitations of that term I used, information communication technologies, is that we don't have people in front of us and we miss all of the things that we look for when we are communicating with somebody. And one of the things that I think is important, particularly in this era when we rely on the media, and particularly digital media, for so much news, is that we have other sources for checking information so that we are dealing factually. It's also important, I think, in terms of our relations with others, that we read an email or we get a text, but we also keep open the door for calling somebody and asking, well, what do you mean by that? Or did I get this meaning correct? So we get some clarification and we do get accurate communication. But in answer to your or in response to what you're saying about people in the restaurant, there's a choice to be made with technology. And thankfully, we live in a beautiful area of the state here with the mountains and the rivers and the wildlife. We can certainly immerse ourselves in technology because it is exciting. Or we can choose to enjoy some of the beauty around us and the people around us and focus our energies there. But that's a choice to be made.
I like that, though. We have a choice. The way it seems now, though, the way it's put out there, you don't have a choice. In other words, I'd rather call you on the phone, but somebody says, no, don't call me. Email me. Well, my choice is to talk, but their choice is to use email. So there's a push and a pull on that, I think, you know?
Well, yeah, that's one of the challenges in our cultures is how do we keep connections with others in a personal way so we have those social supports. And, you know, the reality is that there is a lot more communication that takes place into this digital world. What I say to people is that that's part of the world we all live in, but how, along with that, can you create opportunities where you do connect with others? In the example that you gave at the dinner, that's an opportunity that everybody in the family agrees to, let's put our phones in our pockets and let's have a nice conversation, or let's find a way to meet tomorrow morning for a cup of coffee instead of having emails going back. We'll just have a brief cup of coffee on the way to work. There are choices and decisions we can all make that incorporate the use of technology, but also make some decisions around when to use it, when not to use it, so that we're just working at keeping connections with people around us.
Well, we all have choices. Everything we do every day. You go down one street, you get home safely. You go down the other.
We do.
And you don't get home safely because you know, maybe somebody hits your car. So I've always been thinking about that a lot, about everything's a chore. Everything we do every day, do we take this road or that road? And so you're saying to make choices, and it makes sense to do that.
And I'm not saying to eliminate technology because that's part of our world, but I'm saying do we need to be taking cell phone or business calls late at night? You know, some people have a cell phone that they use for business. Some use it for have a phone that they use for personal use. Are there times during the day when you can say that, well, this is my time of not being on the computer? I call these moments of creating calm or islands of calm during the day when you decide that, well, for 5 or 10 minutes, I'm not going to look at the computer screen. I'm going to go out, walk around the building.
Right. Let's talk about some things that we can do practically. And one of them, I know, techniques to help stress. I know you have a lot in the book about breathing. Now, we all have to breathe, but every day we don't have a choice if we want to be here. But there's a way to breathe to help with stress.
Absolutely. For those of us who watch athletic events, and I suspect at some point that's most of us, or people who get up in front of public, before every foul shot that a basketball player takes, they take a deep breath. Every time a relief pitcher for the Red Sox gets on the mound, and before throwing a pitch, they take a deep breath.
Of course, these days they're taking too many deep breaths because they've been hit and they've been losing. So that's a whole other story. So I don't think you can help them with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can talk about psychology, but I don't know if you can help the Red Sox. If you can, well, God bless you.
Yeah. Well, we won't go there with the Red Sox. But the point being is that athletes know as part of the training that if you want to create a moment of calm for you, and that's what it is, creating a moment of calm, you take a deep breath. Those of us who've been involved in or taken lessons on yoga or meditation or even mindfulness exercises know that these exercises all work to help reduce stress, and they're important to take them, but they all involve breathing. In the book, I write something about called diaphragmatic breathing. I call it rhythmic diaphragmatic breathing. Folks can look online to see and learn a little more about that. But it's a systemized way of breathing in for a certain count, breathing out for a certain count, holding your breath, and uses your diaphragm muscle, which is right by your navel. All of those meditation techniques make use of some form of breathing, and the best, most effective kind of breathing is when you use your diaphragm and do it in some kind of a systematic way.
Right. Interesting. And in the book, you mention the whole process. You go through the whole process
Yes.
of how to do that. You also talk about mindfulness, which you touched on.
Right.
And one of the things that we were talking about, that I know, I think you like music. I think you told me you used to do some singing, and I've done that. Music can that can relieve stress because it's hard to be stressed while you're thinking of something else too.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, if you're trying to if you're the baritone and you're trying to hit the note or whatever it is, it's hard to think about your girlfriend that you're upset with or you're stressed about
right.
or your wife
Absolutely.
Or your car or whatever, right?
Right?
Because you're trying to do something else, so your mind
yeah.
is distracted, right? Is that would that be
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think you made a key point there, Dennis.
Once in a while I do. Not too often,
okay.
but once
well,
in a while.
I'll give you credit for that one.
Thank
then.
You. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor.
We know that stress takes our mind away from what we might enjoy and focuses on whatever we're feeling threatened by. I remember walking across my driveway out in Western Mass here a couple of years ago, and this big old black bear came across the driveway, and I was singing and listening to music, and everything stopped, and my focus was on this bear crossing the driveway. That's what stress does to us. It focuses our brain on things that are threatening so we can deal with it. If we can find ways of changing our focus on other things, it's a way of retraining our brain to avoid stress. And you mentioned singing. That's one way. You mentioned mindfulness, which focuses on things behind ourselves, also a proven way of work it. Also finding things that are funny.
Right.
You can
laughing.
Go
no,
laughing.
Laughing. It's hard to be stressed if you're laughing hard, right?
Absolutely. And there's a whole bunch of videos, I won't mention shows or comedians, but just finding a way to change the focus from what's threatening to something that's more joyful is a way of managing stress on a daily basis. Finding
right.
a conversation, writing, music, all of these things will help divert and train the brain to look at life in a little different way.
Although I have to say, with my sense of humor, I sometimes cause stress. You know what I'm saying? Because I go, oh, he's telling that joke again. You know, so I'm under pressure all the time, you know.
I won't go there with that one, but
okay,
humor does help.
No, it is wonderful, though.
It is wonderful.
To really laugh and right. laugh hard, that's why they're comedians.
Right.
I mean, we need that.
Right.
You know, you
absolutely.
Can't be thinking about the books in your office all the time. You have to get away somehow. You're talking about getting away from part of your life, right?
Correct. Yeah. Let me add to that, because I think you raised a good point. Let me build on it. We're talking about ways of taking your attention off of what's threatening and focusing on other things. And medical studies have shown that the brain can change and start to have this new focus on things that are more pleasant. Having a sense of purpose in life, you know, finding out what's important to you, what you value, and being guided by that is probably one of the most important diversions in terms of managing stress. Because what it does, it says every time you have a higher purpose towards which you're always moving, and that has a way of distracting you from those times when stress and the threats in front of you might be taking you in a different direction.
Right. Well, we go on for hours on this because it's a big problem, but I want to talk about a few of the useful quotes in the book. You have a bunch, and I have a couple of favorites. Give us a couple from the book, or if not, I can mention a couple of ones that I have. You have a bunch of quotes from,
yes.
from famous people.
Right. I've always valued quotations because they offer an alternative way of thinking. And one of the things we know about stress is if we think about things in a different way, very often we can start to take a look at a situation in a different way so that it's not as threatening. Yeah, one of my favorite sayings, and I think it's by the Dalai Lama, is, let me think, I've got it right here, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. It kind of says that, you know, we all deal with a certain amount of stuff every day, and it's uncomfortable, but we don't have to let it linger.
Now,
another one, if I could say
sure.
close to that, is...
Yep. I have a favorite one that was in your book, but
okay.
Go ahead. Maybe it won't be the same one.
This is from a writer from past years. Worrying is like paying on a debt that may never come due. It's by a fellow named Will Rogers. We could be worrying and worrying, but it may not have any meaning at the end.
Right. I have one that I think I took from your book. I think so. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Right.
Which I like that. I don't know who said that, but I mean, in other words, if you want to start something new in your life, try something new. I kind of like that. Well, Steve, we are out of time. We could go on for a day and a half, but our engineer probably wants to have lunch, so I guess we have to, you know, our engineer who keeps us sounding good has things to do. He at the college here at GCC, he runs everything. They're always calling him for something. So I want to thank you for being here on Backyard Oasis. Give me the name of the book again.
It's Lessen the Stressin', Strategies for Becoming Smarter in Managing Stress.
And if people want to get the book, which I'm sure you wouldn't mind, how would they do that?
Just go to a local bookstore, and there's several good ones in the area, or any of the online booksellers.
Well,
it's available in both digital and softcover.
Great. Steve German, thanks for being here today, and I truly hope this wasn't too stressful.
Not at all. It's very pleasant talking to you.
Thanks for being with us for Backyard Oasis. This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819 if you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.